nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thanks for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it's sunny and 50 degrees. Looking for sunny skies for the rest of the day, calm winds, turning to the southeast. For tonight, increasing clouds, a low around 41 tonight, north wind to 5, becoming calm overnight. And for tomorrow, a 50% chance of rain after 10 a.m. These sunny skies are going to be replaced by mostly cloudy skies, high near 50 tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, the first ever shellfish and seaweed festival is going on right now. Well, this evening. Cost of goods and services in Anchorage rose by nearly 5% in April from the same time last year. And the American Red Cross of Alaska has awarded a hero award to someone from Bristol Bay with a big flashlight. That, and we learn about a Seward swimmer going to the Olympic trials. After NPR headline news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A Democratic-backed plan to create a bipartisan commission to investigate the pro-Trump insurrection at the U.S. Capitol in January is advancing to a floor vote in the House later this week. But NPR's Gloria Grisales reports one of former President Donald Trump's strongest allies, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, stands opposed.
Leader McCarthy said he will not support the plan because of, quote, political misdirection that has marred the process and its narrow focus on the Capitol riot. He issued a lengthy statement days after the top Democrat and Republican on the House Homeland Security Committee announced legislation modeled on the commission created after the September 11, 2001 attacks. The bipartisan commission would have subpoena power. But Leader McCarthy and other Republicans have said they want the commission's focus broadened to include other violent incidents. The plan is expected to pass in the House later this week, but its fate in the Senate is unclear. Claudia Grisales, NPR News, Washington.
McCarthy argues the commission should also investigate Black Lives Matter and other groups involved in peaceful protests and riots last summer following George Floyd's murder while in police custody. A day after Floyd's killer was convicted in Minnesota, sheriff's deputies found themselves under heavy scrutiny for the fatal shooting of an African-American man in North Carolina. Today, Pasquotank District Attorney Andrew Womble announced that investigators found the deputies were justified in their response when Andrew Brown Jr. resisted arrest on drug-related warrants.
The law enforcement officers were duty-bound to stand their ground, carry through on the performance of their duties, and take Andrew Brown into custody. They could not simply let him go, as has been suggested.
In a statement, Brown's family said Womble's decision not to press charges was, quote, a slap in the face. Palestinians across Gaza, the Israeli-occupied West Bank, and in parts of Israel stayed away from work today in a massive general strike. NPR's Jackie Northam reports the action is to protest Israeli airstrikes in Gaza.
It was a massive walkout. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinian workers stayed away from shops and restaurants, government buildings and banks. Organizers say the strike is meant to show solidarity with Gaza and to send a message about the treatment of Palestinian citizens of Israel and the occupied West Bank. There were also large demonstrations in many cities across the West Bank. Meanwhile, fighting continues between Israel and Hamas militants. Israeli warplanes attacked targets in Gaza, while Hamas fired more rockets across the border into Israel. Jackie Northam, NPR News, Jerusalem.
This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The first ever Shellfish and Seaweed Festival kicked off on Zoom last night, hosted by Alaska Sea Grant. Presenter and Kodiak's own resident mariculture expert Lexa Meyer can't wait to spread the word about seaweed and oyster farming.
In response to COVID-19, you know, we saw a sharp decrease in sales of bivalves, especially of oysters in Alaska, because that market was almost exclusively a restaurant market. And as restaurants were closed and dining dropped off, so did the sales for oysters. And the seaweed farming industry, of course, is a new industry, a burgeoning industry. So since both industries needed a bit of a boost, we decided to unite them and help promote both industries.
Meyer is Alaska Mariculture Manager for Blue Evolution Seafoods, a major Alaska kelp brand, which is known for its popcorn and pasta. She says that she hopes the event will become an annual feature of the seafood industry. According to her, the event will spend plenty of time discussing the applications of Alaskan kelp and oysters in cooking, as well as devoting much time to the business and process of mariculture. Meyer says the event features both kelp and oysters, since there is often overlap in the farming between the two. While methods are quite different, both can be done in the same area. Those involved in kelp farming are also often involved in oysters and vice versa.
We'll be live streaming it on the Alaska Sea Grant Facebook page. And then if you'd like to attend the actual Zoom meeting, you can register on the Alaska Sea Grant website. That's alaskaseagrant.org. And you can find links to it in our current events page and also to the registration through the Alaska Mariculture and Aquaculture page on the Alaska Sea Grant homepage. So there's links to those places. Go there, and then you can actually register for free for the festival.
The panels will be up and running between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. through Thursday night this week. Each year, the American Red Cross of Alaska awards people around the state for acts of heroism in their community. KDLG's Izzy Ross spoke with one of the 2020 award recipients from Bristol Bay.
A medevac plane flew above Igiagig last August. A child needed to be transported to Anchorage for intensive care. Ida Nelson had just finished taking a steam when she heard the plane overhead. It was late, around 11 p.m., She told the story during last week's Red Cross Real Heroes Award ceremony.
Somebody needed extended care, and the only way to get it is to get them on a medevac and out to Anchorage.
When the plane didn't land, she went to the runway manager. The runway lights were out.
I went to like, well, can I light up the runway? He goes, well, you could try.
But one light from her four-wheeler wasn't going to be enough. As they communicated with the LifeMed pilot, Nelson's neighbors started to get people to the airport.
She was busy calling everybody in the village, waking them up and asking them, hey, run to the runway. We need to light up, we need to light up the runway so the plane can land. Everyone came from the ages of like 8 to like 70 years old.
Residents lined the runway with their vehicles to light the pilot's way. The plane landed and the child who needed care was transported to the hospital. The story received international coverage. The Red Cross reached out to Nelson to offer her a Real Hero Award. Nelson says that for her, lighting up the runway is just another example of the community coming together.
It's something that we in Igiagig do constantly, like almost every day. It's just normal for us to run out and go help somebody when they need help. You know, you don't question the day or the time. If someone is in need, you just go for help. That to us is, you know, at least to me, it's normal. Someone needs help, they're calling for help, you get up and go.
Nelson was one of 10 people to receive awards around the state. You can hear the stories of this year's recipients at redcross.org. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
The cost of goods and services in Anchorage rose by 4.8% in April compared to the same time last year. That's the largest year-to-year increase in the Consumer Price Index in 30 years. There are some caveats, though. The increase is reflected in DOT and data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, and it shows the energy costs played a big role. Neil Freed, an economist with the Alaska Department of Labor, says it's important to remember that April of 2020 was marked by historically low energy prices and other economic irregularities. The price of oil briefly dipped into the negatives, and gasoline fell under $2 a gallon.
You know, it's right. Sort of the depth of the pandemic as far as the economy was concerned.
Energy prices rose 21.5% in the last year, gasoline prices alone nearly 56%. But prices rose in other areas too, clothing, food, housing, medical care, transportation, just to name a few. The trend appears in shorter-term data too. Fried says it's hard to predict where the prices will go from here.
What's going to be interesting is to see if this rate stays up as high as it does. Most national economists don't believe it will, but I think we have to wait and see.
A year of deflation was recorded in Alaska for the first time ever in 2020. Fried says that's one thing that can be ruled out in the year ahead. Next month, on June 14th, star swimmer Lydia Jacoby will be in the pool in Omaha, New England, I guess, for her first swim in the U.S. Olympic trials. More immediately, the 17-year-old is finishing her junior year at Seward High School. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has the story.
Jacoby has the sixth fastest time for the 100-meter breaststroke in the world. She's been qualified for the Olympic trials since she was 14.
Basically, my entire swimming career since that point has kind of been building up to that meet. So it's definitely a lot of pressure, I suppose. And in some ways, it doesn't really feel like real or present just because it has just been this like big event out in the future for so long.
She's also ranked number 3 of all time in the U.S. in her age group and 14 of all time among all U.S. women.
I do kind of like to impress upon her that she can't really lose at this point. She's already done so much.
Solomon D'Amico has coached Jacoby in Seward for the last several years. Jacoby's been part of the Seward Tsunami Swim Club since she was 6. It's been a strange year for training. The Olympic trials were pushed back, along with the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo. And at the beginning of the pandemic, pools were closed. Even after others opened, the Seward pool stayed closed, in part due to maintenance on the facility. So Jacoby stayed with family up in Anchorage over the summer and trained with the Northern Lights Swim Club.
Up there, there's a lot more kids my age, and so it's just been a lot of fun and motivating training up there.
Jacoby says Alaska swimming is a great community. Even as her Seward swim friends started picking up other activities and leaving the sport behind, she'd get to meet swimmers from all over at statewide meets.
And so that kind of was very motivating at that time. Kind of both those things were happening at once. I was meeting new friends around the state while my friends at home kind of moved on to other things.
But Jacoby stuck with swimming. This year, she committed to the University of Texas at Austin, one of several Division I schools that was wooing her for their team.
I just felt a really strong connection with the coaches, and I feel like they really care about me as a person and a team member, not just a number.
She says in college, she plans to study textile and apparel management and design. She says she's always loved clothes.
And maybe a double major or minor in business.
Clothes are one, but not the only manifestation of her artistic spirit. Right before the pandemic, she had an exhibit of her film photography up in Seward. She also sings and plays guitar, piano, and upright bass. Here she is singing and playing with her band, Snow River String Band, at the Anchorage Folk Festival in 2018. D'Amico says she's extremely self-motivated across the board. When it comes to swimming, he says she's more process than outcome focused.
Which, as a coach, you know, looking at the sports psychology side of things, that's really the way you want your athletes to approach things.
That mentality manifests in how she thinks about her Olympic prospects. She has a good shot at making the Olympic team. She came in 2nd at a recent meet behind world record holder and reigning Olympic champ, Lily King. But she says she won't feel unaccomplished if she doesn't make the team.
Because where I was a year ago going into trials before it was postponed, I was nowhere near making the team. And I just have so much further to go with my swimming career. That's just the beginning.
D'Amico agrees. He says at this point, she's playing with house money. For KDLL, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Three Dillingham fifth graders want to change a road's name that's marked by a racist and derogatory term toward indigenous women. The students worked closely with teachers, school district staff, and women in the community and came up with a name that connects with several local people. KDLG's Tyler Thompson has this report.
Alora Wassily, Trista Wassily, and Harmony Larson were learning about the history of colonization in social studies class. They visited with the Chugyung tribe and learned the story of the Seven Sisters. Here's Alora Wassily.
They landed by Squaw Creek and they were looking for a white husband and to have kids and stuff. And then there's also white men looking for a native wife. So squaw usually meant young woman or female anatomy. Then when white settlers came, it became a derogatory word towards native women.
The Seven Sisters traveled to Dillingham from Nushagak Point, a fishing village to the south. The sisters settled there and lived between Squaw Creek and Lake Road. At a presentation to Dillingham School Board, Tribal Administrator Courtney Carty shared how the creek and road got its name.
Because there was a place where white men could go to find a native wife.
After that visit with the tribe, the girls told their teacher, Stephanie Jensen, that they wanted to change the name. Jensen was ecstatic and contacted Carty, Amber Webb, and Tiara Schroeder. Jensen says they worked on changing the name before COVID-19 put that effort on hold.
They came in, they shared everything they had done in the spring, and then we reached out to Robin Chaney, who kind of helped us with the planning as well. So we had a really great group of women who've been working together on this. It's been really inspirational to see what these girls have done.
The students want the name changed to Seven Sisters Creek to reflect the community's connection to the sisters. Carty, Webb, Schroeder, and Chaney used a family tree to show how each of them are descendants of the Seven Sisters. Speaking first is Alora, followed by Trista and Harmony.
Descendants of the Seven Sisters through adoption and
marriage.
And marriage and stuff
and
like that.
Harmony
and we're all...
And Alora, we were sisters 5 generations ago.
Yep.
During a presentation to the Dillingham School Board, the students said they spoke with Elder Dora Andrew Erke about Yupik names for the creek. Jensen led a call with Andrew Erke, who shared Yupik words for Seven Sisters Creek.
Okay, Seven Sisters.
And creek?
And
then creek by itself is Kwishetcho, but then when you say, like you're talking Seven Sisters Creek, it's a small creek, not a big one.
Alora Wassily said she counted 6 signs displaying the word on her way home from school. The last slide in the girls' presentation shows a road sign displaying the words Squaw Creek on Kanaknak Road. Wassily explains why she chose that picture. At the end of the presentation, Robin Chaney shared how the adults helped the students put this project together. Chaney and others asked them to consider traditional decision-making, or not just what's best for now, but what's best for future generations.
So we determined that not only are we all connected to the Seven Sisters, but some of us are also 7 generations from those Seven Sisters, which is significant to us in our traditional decision-making. So that's something I asked them to consider was the impact to their 7th generation. How would that impact the school? What bus stop might their kids get picked up at?
The 5th grade students requested that the Dillingham City School District write a letter of support to rename the road. They also asked the Chugyung Tribal Council for a tribal resolution to change the name. Their next step will be to meet with the city. But changing the name may be a challenge. It's a private road, and the city's code has no process to make that happen. City Planner Cynthia Rogers said in an email that a change to the code would be needed to provide a renaming process. In Dillingham, I'm Tyler Thompson.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. What technology needs are tops with fishermen? A fascinating survey aims to find out. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute provides digital and print marketing materials to the Alaska seafood industry. Find thousands of stunning photos, high-quality video footage, and sales tools at alaskaseafood.org.
Fishermen across the nation are being asked to help identify technology priorities through a Seafood Harvesters of America survey. Lee Habiger is group director.
This survey kind of rose out of the recognition that the fishing industry needs a lot of advancements in the technology department. A lot of times we see vessels using technology that's 10, 12, 15 years old, and they haven't really caught up with all the technological advances.
The short survey includes tech advancements in four areas: sustainability, such as bycatch reduction and gear selectivity, safety, productivity, and data, such as sensors for collection.
We're hoping that we're able to put together sort of a list of priorities and share that with the people who are interested in funding tech development for the fishing industry.
Broadly scaling tech advances is a big challenge to make them cost-effective for developers. Something designed for a specific problem or region can mean the user group is too small, says Harvester's Vice President Edward Polson of Alaska Bering Sea Crabbers.
However, if you can show that there's a lot of other fishing vessels in the United States that may have some similar sort of a need, then all of a sudden technology companies have a lot larger interest.
Input from across the U.S. will help identify similar needs and patterns. Lee Habiger.
Maybe the folks who are using fixed gear pots in New England, we might start to see some similarities with, you know, the Dungeness crab out on the West Coast. And is there a solution that might work to address whale entanglements across both of these fisheries?
The Harvesters group hopes to gather responses by the end of May. A priority list and a report will follow, along with plans to bring all stakeholders together this fall. Find links to the survey at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 18th day of May, the year 2021. Sun rose today at 5:40. It will set again at 10:38. That will give us 16 hours and 54 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 54 seconds compared to yesterday. A record low for this day was 30, set in 2013. A record high was 69, set in 2002. That record is safe. In fact, we've dropped a couple of degrees. We were at 50, now 48 degrees. Still a wonderfully beautiful day out there. Sunny skies, still looking for a high near 52. Calm winds should turn to the southeast this afternoon, go to 5 miles per hour. For tonight, we are going to see some increasing clouds, a low of about 41, and north winds to 5 miles per hour, becoming calm. For tomorrow, 50% chance of rain after 11 a.m. and mostly cloudy skies with a high near 50. Rain for Wednesday night and a low of around 43. East wind to 25 miles per hour could gust as high as 30 on Wednesday night. Looking at our local tides here, we do have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 1:22 p.m. That will be a 0.4-foot tide. Next, we'll have a high tide at 8:19 p.m. That will be a 5.7-foot tide. Our low tide for after midnight will be at 1:19 a.m. and be 3.7 feet. And our high tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will be at 7:17 a.m. and be a 7-foot tide. Over on the west side, in these Euganic Pass tides, you have a low tide coming up at 1:48 p.m. That will be a 1.6-foot tide. Your next high tide will be at 8:36 p.m. and be 10.8 feet. Your low tide for the wee hours will be at 2:20 a.m. and be 5.7 feet, and your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 7:57 a.m. and be 10.9 feet. Mariners, here is your weather synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A front will move into the southwestern Gulf of Alaska Tuesday evening and move to the North Gulf Coast Wednesday night. As a result, we do have a small craft advisory for Wednesday for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. West wind to 25 knots right now. Strike that. West wind to 20 knots right now and seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, look for southeast wind to 25 knots, seas to 6 feet, should build to 11 feet tomorrow afternoon. Over in the Shelikof on Kodiak's west side, small craft advisory for Wednesday as well. Southwest 20 right now in the Shelikof and seas to 5 feet. For tomorrow, variable winds to 10 knots will turn to the east and go to 25 knots tomorrow afternoon. Seas will build to 7 feet tomorrow afternoon in the Shelikof. For inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays, Chiniac Bay, variable winds less than 10 right now and seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, southeast winds to 20 knots, seas to 1 foot will build to 6 feet tomorrow afternoon in Chiniac Bay. Up in Marmot Bay, west wind to 15 knots right now will turn to the southwest and go to 10 knots this afternoon, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow in Marmot Bay, southeast wind to 10 knots will increase to 20 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas building to 7 feet in Marmot Bay tomorrow afternoon. The Ports and Harbor Advisory Board is meeting right now. They started at 12 p.m. at the Kodiak Fisherman's Hall. That meeting is open to the public and will be web-streamed as well. And you can get the web-streaming link at the City of Kodiak website. For more information, call the Harbor Office at 486-8080. The KMXT Board of Directors are holding their regular meeting tonight at 6 p.m. via Zoom. If you'd like to sit in on the meeting, please call us here at the station at 486-3181, or you can send an email and we'll send you a link. That email should go to gm@kmxt.org. The Kodiak Emergency Operations Center has received one new reported case of COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. This case was tested on the 16th and is considered community transmission. Kodiak Island Borough School District Board of Education is seeking citizens interested in serving on the board through October 2021. Letters of interest must be received by 5 p.m. tomorrow. Interviews for the appointment will take place on the May 24th special work session, and the appointment will occur then too, after which you'll have a special meeting. Citizens interested in serving on the school board should submit a letter of interest to Bianca Clark, the school board secretary, Kodiak Island Borough School District, that address 722 Mill Bay Road, Kodiak. Senior Citizens of Kodiak is having their board of directors meeting. That's happening on Friday, May 21st in the Senior Center's multi-purpose room. This meeting is open to the public. For more information, call the Senior Center at 486-6181. Things happening at the public library. Reading colors your world. Join the Kodiak Public Library Saturday, May 22nd at 11 to 3 p.m. for the kickoff of the library's summer reading program. Sign up for the 2021 summer reading program for a summer of exploration, learning, and fun. All ages are welcome to participate in person or online, and you can have activities, earn prizes. The library is excited to bring back Beanstack, an online program to log your reading, earn prizes, and join library activities all summer. For more information, contact Ani at 486-8683. And have you heard the buzz? Kodiak Public Library is hosting a community beekeeping project this summer. Check out their mini books on everything bee-related, and you can watch a live hive check every Tuesday at 11 a.m. And you can also tune in at the library's YouTube channel. Call to reserve a spot outside with the beekeeper, or you can watch from inside. For more information, contact Ani at 486-8683. And AMC and Alaska Sea Grant are conducting their fishing vessel drill conductor class. The next ones are happening Thursday, May 27th, and Friday, May 28th. Thursday class is from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. The Friday is from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and it's happening at the UFA Seafood and Marine Science Center over on Near Island. The cost of the class is $125 for commercial fishermen and $175 for all others. It certainly is well worth it. This class meets the U.S. Coast Guard training requirements for drill conductors on commercial fishing vessels. To register online, go to www.amsea.org, or you can call them at 747-3287.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.